Hello and welcome to the QU podcast here on the QU Media Podcast Network. Quincy University students are telling each other stories this week. I'm your host, Carter Lenzen, and welcome to our reporter roundtable for the fall semester of 2024. We're just getting finished with this semester, and we'd like to check in with our QU Media reporters to see what stories they are working on and talk about what's happening on campus. I want to welcome and introduce everybody who's on the podcast today. We got a whole roundtable of people. But let's start off with my friend Austin over there. How about you, buddy? Introduce yourself.
My name is Austin Haskins. I am a track and field athlete here at Quincy University, and that kind of ties into my story, which is Quincy University athletes on the track and field team here are practicing without a track or a Quincy University-related track. These athletes, about 3 or 4 days a week, have to travel to the local high school in order for them to train to their max of their capacities. We recruit athletes without a track, which is actually amazing. I don't know how we get it done, but we do every year. We have a pretty good team this year. We have a lot of positive-minded people, but it's a very common theme that all of us are a little upset that we don't have a track. You have jumpers on our team without a sand pit. And you have sprinters on a team without a runway. And I believe a track on campus would absolutely boost our team and make it a lot better. And if we look at a competition side of it, the GLVC, which is the conference that the QU Hawks compete in, there are a total of 15 teams. 14 of those have a men's and women's team. 10 of them have access to a track 24/7 on their campus. Out of those four teams that don't have a track, including QU, the other ones being Rockhurst, University of Missouri St. Louis, and University of Illinois Springfield, they all don't have a football team. QU does. Two other teams in the conference that don't have football teams are Lewis and I believe Maryville and Lewis are the other two teams without a football team, but they have a track. How do they do it? They have a soccer team. We also have a soccer team here at Quincy University without a track. Those are two of my solutions that I found. A track could be installed possibly around the soccer area. I believe there's a lot of room back there. Obviously, I think the football field would be a lot harder. That is a very, very big stadium.
Definitely. And there are a lot of rocks around that. Can't really move.
Yeah.
But my two other friends here at the beginning of this podcast, Grant and Angelina, do you guys want to start off introducing yourself and asking some questions to Mr. Austin here?
Yeah, I'm Angelina Pagliaccio. And just to piggyback off of him, I researched over student athletes and the rise of tuition and how it affects all student athletes, because most of us are coming in and giving us scholarships at a certain point, but every year it's been rising, the tuition has. And over the past 5 years alone, it's rose over 34.5%. And most student athletes do not get compensated for this. Just in the year last year, which was my first year, it rose 8.9%, and it's up to $31,000 a year or per year. And most of these student athletes are not getting compensated. And I focused more on the international kids because they're the ones that are getting affected the most, because they have to think about flights. They have to think about getting back home, being here, stuck here. And it's very, very tricky. I asked my friend Jordan Satumba. He was talking about how the tuition increase is putting his family through very rocky situations, because the translation through money and just all that stuff is really costing him a lot more than Americans. But most Americans, and I talked to parents, like a lot of parents were getting, because that's, okay, for me especially, I'm getting paid, like my parents are paying because I'm the first child. And so my parent, especially, I asked her, she said that for her, the tuition is going up and she can't pay for half of the stuff that she would like to pay for, which is insane. And over the years, Quincy has come out with multiple things saying that they can't do anything because everybody else is rising. And just in our conference alone, it's rising as well, because Maryville had to rise over 3.4%, and just academic years, it's going up. There's no way to challenge it or get around it.
Yeah, I definitely feel you on that one. getting that email over Thanksgiving break saying tuition's rising another 3.4%, which is around $1,700 just for next year. It was a little shot to the heart.
Yeah, most coaches are not going to compensate for that either. Right. I know the swim team, I don't think we are. Last year we got to, but this year I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, budgets are a thing that are always going to be set in stone.
Oh, yeah.
You just got to work around it. But we'll get to more of those questions later. But, Mr. Grant, can you tell us about your story about that Penny Lane might need a wet floor sign here soon?
Yeah, it definitely does because I think that's one of the most dangerous parts of campus. I think it's not I think it's part of – I don't know. I just think that –
Did it snow? It snowed yesterday.
Yeah, it did.
And I personally almost busted it on there. I saw a few other people commenting on like Yik Yak saying who's going to fall first. I know that's a huge thing that's been going around right now.
Well, yeah. So I actually did research on like I asked security and they used a different kind of paint and like not a non-weatherproof paint. So like which is not very smart. So So I think the main idea to solve that problem is weatherproof paint, and then also like the when it rains it just all puddles up, like it just it doesn't like what is that drain
so there's no drain pipe
there's
no drain system so, there's no
yeah like I just drains. Think I don't know it's just not a great idea
all right.
And then
so that's good thing there. We're all about student safety, and it's kind of all about your stories.
Mm-hmm.
Financial safety, athletic safety, just safety walking across campus. But first things first, I want to go back to Mr. Austin here. You talked about putting a track over here on North Campus by the soccer field. Did you look at any budgetary stuff for that about like how much it would be to place that in?
So I didn't get exactly into budgets. Obviously, building a track is probably over $1 million, $2 million, something like that. It would take quite a bit of money to go ahead and install one. But, I mean, we're a Division II university, and in order to be a lot more competitive and possibly get a conference title, obviously, I think a track is step one.
Track is definitely step one for that. And you're for just a regular bare-bones track without stadium, you're looking around $450,000 to $500,000. And then once you want to put a little some seating around it, then you're going to get north of that $1 million. So a small little Division II university is going to start to struggle with that. So how has the track team been able to kind of still recruit with no track?
So for distance runners such as myself, we run about 30, 40, 50, sometimes 70 miles a week, and you don't exactly need a track in order to do that. So you could recruit a lot more distance athletes, the ones that don't need the facility to train. But you obviously need numbers on your team. We have throwers on our team. They just installed a concrete pad kind of next to the parking lot by the football stadium. Yeah. They put a net around there. That was a
They definitely
quick fix.
Did not want a discus going through someone's window.
And I believe that happened one time last year. They were throwing a shot put, and I think it went through someone's car. And that was a very interesting meeting to hear about.
Very interesting meeting with the insurance as well, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Grant, Angelina, you have any questions for Mr. Austin?
Not that I can think of, but just how did you get recruited for it? Why did you come to Quincy for track? Because I know that they probably told you that there was no track or anything like that.
So when I came to QU my freshman year, I actually played in the band. I got a scholarship on the drum line, and I kind of just I didn't really like it as much as I did in high school, and I saw that the cross-country team was kind of small. So I was a walk-on athlete. I had no scholarship, and I got decently good at track by the end of my freshman year, so I decided to start doing that full-time. The track issue has never been a huge thing for me because I came from a high school without a track, so the switch was easy for me, but there obviously everyone else recruited on my team comes from my high school with a track, so I think I'm the only one on my team that is just used to it at this point. So it's a huge issue for everyone, and I just want the best for the other guys that are, you know, conference qualifiers, national qualifiers, and have dreams to go to the Olympics some days.
Great teammate, sounds like.
Oh yeah, great teammate. Mm-hmm. Big walk-on guy. Big walk-on guy. Gotta love the walk-ons for Division II athletes. Gotta love them. Backblood of every single team
for real
are the walk-ons. So, Angelina, you talked about rising tuition, and So we talked a little bit about how each team kind of has budgetary restrictions. How does that differ once tuition rises? So if they're stuck in their budget, what happens? Does that mean scholarships get cut from people? What do we
usually think? Coaches bring on walk-ons. That's what I do know for multiple teams, such as track, for swimming. Swimming especially, they are trying to recruit for this upcoming season. They're trying to recruit way more walk-ons, which means slower people, yes, but that means more money in the pockets of us. So, which is really good, but at the same time, there's good and bads to it all.
Right. It's very powerful because mm-hmm. most of those walk-ons, they develop into somebody great.
Oh, yes.
And then they're your glue guys on your team.
Oh, yeah. They have the best attitudes on the team. They have the best personality. They're usually the backbones of everything that we do. They're the ones that are getting captain. They're the ones doing everything for us.
All right. Thank you, Angelina. What a great story. Good thing. Good stuff to hear. Everybody needs to know about the little budget problems going on. But, Grant, what are some of the solutions that you came up with for Old Penny Lane? Was it drainage system?
Yeah, and then also bulletproof paint, because like you know, the stuff we put on decks makes it not slick in the winter. Right. Yeah, that kind of stuff. Even just like a clear coat after everyone's done painting, it would also be beneficial.
Right.
It's also not like super expensive where you're gonna be mm-hmm. like breaking your budget putting a new track in. It's not gonna cost you $1 million. It's not gonna cost you scholarships. It's just gonna literally do a once over, two times over, and then yeah.
And you can keep it over years. Like, we're not going to use it multiple times.
Yeah. Those big 5-gallon jugs of paint.
Yeah, and also, I'd probably also save like the paint that chips off as mm-hmm. the year goes along. So having that clear coat would also protect it and make it actually look good. Yeah. So, because that's like the one thing that people on tours, like, that's to make sure they show them that we have is like all that. The whole school is like a big family, and then they all unite to do that in Penny Lane.
So. Do you know how many people have fallen on Penny Lane this year alone?
No, it's crazy because, like, when I go to practice, it's, like, 6 a.m., and it's, like, it rained the night before. It's dewy. Oh, my God. It's terrible. Like, it's, like, you have to, like, walk on your tiptoes to
not
fall.
I know a lot of people go around Penny Lane. They don't even walk on it by that point.
And also, like, the people that are on scooters, too. Like, I'm scared, like, that they're just going to wipe out.
Yeah. Well, Grant, thank you for the insight on Penny Lane, keeping us for everybody here on campus safe. Grant, Austin, Angelina, thank you for coming on for our first little bit of the reporter debrief. You guys did a great job. When we come back, we'll have a new set of three, and this has been QU. Welcome back here to QU and our little reporter debrief for the end of the semester. We have three new stories talking about here on this small little break after we heard about great stories about Penny Lane, track difficulties, and rising tuition, how that affects the athletes. Now we got some great stories. One affecting campus safety over on the corner of Chestnut and 20th Street. Shelby, do you want to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about that story?
I'm Shelby Lloyd, and I'm a sophomore here at Quincy University. And I realized, as one of my teammates on the women's lacrosse team, she got in a really bad car accident last year that hit her driver's side, because when she stopped at the stop sign on 20th at that intersection, she couldn't see who was coming and who was not because of the parallel parking as well. And unfortunately, the guy that was coming up was speeding, so she had no time to react, and her car was totaled. And luckily she's okay right now. She did have a major concussion and a lot of back pain still currently, and a pretty good whiplash as well. And so I decided to write my story about the intersection, and I also decided to start a petition as well to bring to the city, hopefully. And right now I think I have about 60 or 70 signatures, so hopefully we can get more signatures coming.
Yeah, I remember you sitting in front of the CAF with just like, yeah. Hey, you know that intersection 20th and Chestnut? You know how it's dangerous? Yeah, sign this petition, we're going to get it fixed. It's a very cool thing. Logan, you have any insight on her story?
Yeah, I just have a question. How did you even start the research process for that? Like, where did you start interviewing people? What information were you looking for to begin with?
I was kind of looking for something that kind of strikes emotion. That kind of strikes like, oh, this is like dangerous. This is happening to people that we know, and this is happening to multiple students. Like, what if it happens to me? You know?
Oh, yeah.
And most recently, there was a dog that got killed on Chestnut in front of Heline. And the family of that dog posted on Nextdoor, the app, the digital app, and they're looking for the footage. And it was their son's dog as well.
It's terrible.
I know.
It's terrible. Hopefully there might be a security camera on the top of Heline over there that might be able to show something at least. So
I really hope they
prayers for their family, definitely in that hard time. But Rochelle, do you have any questions about her story?
I don't have any questions, but I don't have any doubt that you'd be able to surpass, I mean, well over 100 signatures. I mean, I saw you outside the CAF asking for them, and people were not hesitant at all to sign. I think everyone believes in the safety that we need to strive to on campus, and that corner especially is undoubtedly like an infamous, dangerous spot to be driving on or walking nearby, especially for people who have to cross the street every single day to get to their dorm, i.e. Gardner and Heline. So,
and Woods, too.
Yes, can't forget about Woods. And Willer. Basically the entire
campus.
The entire campus except SLC, Friars, and Pad.
Oh, yeah, they're safe.
They're safe. They got C-Lot. Not over there on 20th and Chestnut, but... Logan, you had a pretty interesting story yourself. You want to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, I am Logan Mulch, and I'm actually a dual credit student through QU, so I'm actually still technically in high school. But I decided to focus on the exit interview process and how what that looks like, how that affects students, how leaving the university, whether it be seeking a new major, which is what I'll be doing at the end of this year, or if it's not a great relationship with a teacher, really bad relationship with a coach, what that looks like, and how students leave the university. And there's a lot of error and opportunity for improvement in this interview process. And going into it, it was really scary to be like, I'm questioning people's jobs, and like, that's not what I wanted to do. It was just like, how can we make this better? Because that's a terrifying notion to have to walk into someone's office and be like, here's why I don't want to be here. Can I leave now? That's terrifying. I don't want to do it. I'm terrified. So kind of stepping back and like, all right, so how does this work? What can we do to improve it? It was tedious. I had to email and email and email to even get spoken to first, because it's touchy subject questioning someone's like ethics and job quality. But at the end of the day, it was a really great discovery of like, so here's what we're doing wrong. Like, one of the big issues was how we record answer interviews. We're very limited to the way it's currently set up in the school system, is that it's just a drop-down menu. There's no room really for customization or like specificity within each student's experience. So they're kind of limited to these, I think it was 12 options. So if we were able to redesign and redevelop the program where in which it was more of like, you can type in an answer, type in more specific information, even that small change makes it so much easier, both on a faculty side and on a student side, to ensure that what happened to you and what your experience was is heard and understood.
Right. That's definitely a little bit frustrating to definitely say, hey, there's something wrong with why I'm leaving, and I can't tell you why.
Yeah.
You got to just hit, all right?
That's definitely a really interesting story topic. I honestly never even thought about it when we were brainstorming. So I commend you for that, because I honestly, the thought never even went through my head that that kind of tricky endeavor was being like going on in the school.
Yeah, how I got the topic is actually a really funny story, because I was interviewing the person I did my profile story over, and after the interview, she's like, so what else are you like working on and writing on? I was like, well, the big thing is like this issue story at the end of the semester. She's like, I have something for you. And I was like, oh, this is so fascinating. Tell me more. So then she kind of like sat me down and explained the whole thing. I was like, this is wild. Like, how did I not know about this? And that was one of the first, like, starting points research-wise, is it's not mentioned anywhere in the student handbook. So unless you have to go through it yourself or know someone who went through it, there's no way for you to know about it.
I'm glad that you're bringing an awareness to this, too, because I feel like it's really important. Like, it doesn't sound like the most important, like, it's not, like, a safety issue, but it is.
Yeah.
It is a very big ethical issue.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. It's a very scary situation ending up leaving here at QU, and your reason of leaving not being portrayed correctly to the next university you're going to. It's a little scary situation. So what has been your solutions you have found to kind of help this process, make it more streamlined?
Yeah. One of the big things we're looking at is making the actual entry and data entry on the like faculty side into the student profile just a little bit more efficient. It can be very tedious to like have to go through in each and every one of them. So if we make it a little more simplistic, a little more so exit date and reason why being not a drop-down menu and more of just a like fill in the blank kind of moment where you can type in whatever is necessary, whatever is needed. But one recommendation I had from one of the people I got to interview was having it be more of an advisor's responsibility rather than it being a faculty member running the interviews. Because over the course of even just a semester or a year, there's a stronger relationship with an advisor than you would a faculty member. So they would also have more insight to what the student's been going through and what steps the student needs to take to maybe keep them at QU rather than having them transfer out, so it's less of a done deal and more of a like open conversation.
Yeah, very very smart. I know we got some IT people in here. It's pretty. I'd have to guess it's pretty simple to change something from a drop down menu to a fill in the blank. Yeah. Hopefully, so that's a very good thing that you brought up. Hopefully, that gets added to the student handbook, and we get. You're on the right track to make a very good change for the university. So keep working at it. And Rochelle, Miss Rochelle, you want to introduce yourself and tell us about your story?
Sure. Yeah. So my name is Rochelle Witzke. I'm a sophomore at Quincy. And for my issue story, I decided to research more into, I guess you could say in a way, the record of violence or maliciously intent attacks on women on campus over the past few months. This story particularly I thought was going to be very difficult because either it's a very touchy subject or you get into the lines of confidentiality or keeping anonymity for people who experience these types of acts. But I actually got to interview the new head of security, Rob Copley. And I say I'm pleasantly surprised that the dialogue was so open, and he was very willing. It wasn't a sort of space that was, oh, I was interrogating him on how he was conducting security on campus or whatever. He understood the trepidation amongst women on campus and the fear that is and has always been in, like, women, especially in a college campus when people are far away from their families or from places that they think are safe. He was able to give me a lot of insight onto how security conducts themselves in these manners when these types of reports come up and how he continues to remain vigilant in aiding women feeling safer on campus.
Yeah, that's very, very scary situation that some of these women have gone through. I'm in full support of this story. It's very important that we need to get that. But one of the questions I have is, there's been multiple cases of this. How do they defer when they're off campus, say at that Bob Mays Trail or something, and when they're on campus? How do they differ?
So I know the specific situation you're regarding, the Bob Mays Trail, which I actually was able to cover in my story. It's really tricky. We're very thankful that Rob Copley was a former police officer, police chief. So the relationship between Quincy Police and QU Security itself is very, the communication is strong. Whenever we need them, they come. And if there is violent attacks, I mean, the only thing you can do, I guess, in that situation is call 911. Referring to QU security is not going to be your best bet if you are off campus. But in situations like these where you don't get to choose when or where it happens, the situations do differ because there is even more a sense of loss of security because you come to Quincy to go to Quincy University. I mean, we have like a long stretch, basically a block of campus that is our little hub. And when you're outside of it and you're met with these types of circumstances, it can be especially frightening. So I think something important that I discovered in my story is how these types of things don't only affect the campus, but the community around, because now a lot of girls don't want to go outside of campus. And that can just be like a sour cards of to be dealt with.
It's definitely a scary situation when you leave home. Most of these people are 4 or 5 hours away and they don't feel safe in their new home. It's very scary. Shelby, Logan, do you have anything to say about this?
I just think it's a huge kudos to this had to be a very difficult story to approach because it's a lot of very sensitive information. And let me rephrase the question. What is the best like outcome you've seen that kind of restored your hope in a solution and coming into a better position? Or was it more of a just like, it's a terrible situation and that's it?
Yeah, it was a hard story to write, especially because as a reporter, you want to remain unbiased and just report the facts, but it's hard because it's, as a woman myself, it's like witnessing and being a victim to absolutely. This as well. And I think one thing that came out of the story that was really profound was a strengthened community amongst the women on campus because we recognize within each other and ourselves that, I mean, it's not the best situation, obviously.
Yeah.
But the fact that we're all working towards something better together, I mean, even like the men on campus, like everyone knows it's a bad situation. Yeah. And I think something that good has come out of the story is like everyone is open to solutions. No one wants to see this go on, obviously. So any solution is a step in the right direction. Yeah. I mean, talking to Rob Copley, he mentioned how even in the past, the football team, a few years back, was for like some sort of like a volunteer community outreach. They were on-call escorts to women at night for anyone who was either walking back from like a job. Like I know some girls, older girls work at like bars nearby, and they need escorts to walk them back home at night, or escorts from back a sea lot or anything like that. And even in my research, which, I mean, I had to cut a lot out, honestly, to meet the word max, because there is so much more that can be discovered and researched upon, especially on this topic. But, I mean, for the solutions, like even Carter had mentioned to me earlier, a LiveSafe app that he used.
Yeah. So with the St. Louis Cardinals, we used to have this thing. It was called LiveSafe, and it was a emergency service app. So if you, obviously Busch Stadium's not in the greatest area, so you could hit a button and say, okay, I need security to this location to walk me to my car or drive me in a gator to my car. And I thought it would be a very good situation to have here because it's just one click of a button and it's very easy, streamlined to have everybody help.
And hopefully in the future, bouncing off of Logan's question, I also agree. I think this is a discussion that has risen this past year. That could just be me, but I feel like it's becoming way more prevalent and way more scary. And it's very isolating as well to everybody, I fear. But where do you see this like going in the future? Like your story, like the impact and the awareness. What are you looking for kind of an outcome or a step towards the direction?
I definitely don't think the story is finished yet. I think there's a lot more to research and there's a lot more people to talk to. I mean, I did a sample survey outside the CAF and got 20 or so odd responses from women on campus. But I mean, at the end of the day, I want every voice to be heard. And whether that be girls feel just fine, they don't feel safe, or girls feel extremely unsafe. My hope is that whenever the story is done and finished, that there is like there is a promise that there things will get better. And it's I want people to know when the story is done or as I'm conducting the research that the problem is just not going unignored. Like people know this and recognize it and want to change it too.
Well, very powerful stories again, guys. You guys have done a great job. I know Professor Baldner has been very proud reading your stories and she's very excited to get these out published. So good job, Rochelle, Shelby, and Logan. Great job. And we're going to be right back with another three special reporters here on QU. Welcome back to our final little session here of QU here on the QU Media Podcast Network. Again, I am your host, Carter Lindzen, and we've had a lot of great stories today on this edition of our little reporter roundtable for the end of the fall 2024 semester. Again, we've had stories from paint on Penny Lane to more serious stories about women's safety on campus, but we have, again, a ton of great stories here. And Ms. Freya Henson, you've kind of went through a little problem with our learning management system here on campus. Do you want to introduce yourself and take us through that?
Henson. My name is Freya Henson, and I'm a junior here at QU. And I'm actually a transfer student as well. So at my previous college, we had Canvas as our learning system, and coming here at Quincy University and using Moodle was a big difference. So I kind of thought that the story about Moodle would be like a really good story because there has been a lot of frustrations at the campus about Moodle and that it has not been working in situations and stuff like that. I actually talked with Logan Mulch, and he has had a lot of trouble with Moodle because his courses and his exams on Moodle has completely disappeared. So he was he had to go to IT to get it fixed. And several times he haven't been able to log into Moodle as well because the Moodle changed his personal email with his QU email. So just a lot of trouble with Moodle and that has been going on for several students on campus.
Oh, technology. Isn't it the most fun thing in the world? But, one of my questions is as a person who's both used Canvas and Moodle, what have you noticed as the big differences in just general compatibility?
So the biggest difference I thought is the organization within Moodle. Like, Canvas is way more structured. You can see when your assignment is due, when teachers text you, like just all of that. I think that's way more structured and what courses you have than Moodle is very unorganized. You have to press a button to like get your assignments out and see the due dates. And sometimes you have to click in on them to see stuff. And not every teacher announces or put notifications out what assignment is due, so I think that has been a huge difference.
All right. Our other two reporters on table, would you like to introduce yourself and kind of put some insight on this little Moodle story here?
My name is James Morton. I'm currently a sophomore. A question that I have is that did you look into the financials of the swapping between a different platform instead of Moodle, or the implications of how it integrates with our current systems that are in place?
So I talked with Susan Grant, which is the tech specialist at Quincy University, and she said that Canvas would definitely be way more expensive, which would also lead to an increased tuition. But I have had students saying that they would think it's like important to maybe get a different platform to not get interrupted with their student learning, because instead of stressing over your Moodle platform not working, then you could be having focused on your assignments. So, but yeah, the changing platforms would definitely become more expensive.
What if they change to a different free platform? Like, we know Moodle is a free service that the university uses. What if we went to like a Google Classroom type setting, since Google Classroom is a part of the, since we are a Google school, it is comes free with our service?
Yeah, definitely. I actually made a survey about like if we should change platforms, and a lot of people said that they use Google Google in their high school and they loved it, so they would love to use it here too, and because they're used to it, it would work more efficient.
Right. Brianna, what do you think?
How did you start researching into this? Like, what was your first step into it?
So my first step was actually talking with Logan, because I heard that he had a lot of trouble with Moodle. So I kind of just wanted to hear his story. And once I heard his story, I was like, okay, I need to dig into this, because he had trouble with everything disappearing on his Moodle, even his grades, which the professors had to like put grades in the book, so, and they couldn't see his grades, but he did all his finals and midterms. So I just think that was so interesting. So I went and talked with other students to hear if they had problems too, and several students have had similar problems as him. So that was kind of my approach. And then I wanted to hear a more professional quote from Susan Grant and what her experience with Moodle was.
So your findings ended up, moral of the story was, it works, just not well.
Yeah,
exactly. It works, just not well, and there's better options, which is great to hear from a student voicing the student opinion about the operating system that we all use here on campus, because I've heard faculty complain a little bit. I heard a lot of faculty complaints when they updated it. They were like, I just got used to it. Now it's different. But great job, and really digging deep into that story. It's a very tough thing to look at. Because technology can be dumb sometimes. It does exactly what you tell it to do. So sometimes it's very dumb. So good job, Freya. And now, Brianna, do you want to introduce yourself and tell us about your story?
Yeah, I'm Brianna Graham, a junior here at QU studying PR. My topic was about commuters and kind of like a... what word did I use? I'm so sorry.
Oh, you're good. You're good. It's a little bit... A little bit of commuter stuff. So you're a commuter yourself, correct?
I am. Yes.
Are you a Quincy native, or are you from Keokuk, Hannibal area? Or
I'm from like the Camp Point area.
Camp Point area, yeah. Okay.
So my story was about like the problems that commuters face and how that kind of like affects their like life on campus. So like the main problems that I found out, so I did a survey and I got 23 response, and the majority of the problems was it was a lack of engagement on campus, places to gather, and proper meal plans. So because of all that, commuters just struggle with life on campus.
Right, yeah, and it's very tough to be a part of a campus when you're not really here all the time. Like, I know there's people who were on campus at some point in their college career and then moved off to an off-campus apartment or something like that, and they kind of still struggle with that as well, because they're so tight. And it's a very tight-knit group here on campus, so it's kind of hard to break in when you're not here all the time. James, Freya, you have any questions for Brianna?
Yeah, I was like wondering what solutions or findings you like figured out, if there was anything to increase.
So like the main problem was, of course, parking. Mm-hmm. And so with that, it was just expand or create more parking spots. And one thing that I kind of looked more into, too, was that apparently from the math I did, the incoming class sizes are bigger than our leaving class sizes. So there's just too much here on campus, and we're not accommodating correctly for all these. For the meal plan problem, that one kind of surprised me because it's an issue I kind of had, but I didn't think it was going to be as big as it was. And so that one was just either, like, recreate the meal plans to work better with commuters or advertise them more because some people don't even know they exist. And then the lack of engagement. A lot of events apparently are not, like, making it to commuters, or there's, like, resident-only events, and so commuters are feeling left out because they're not even being invited at, like, half the stuff going on.
Right, right. And then, so one thing I do have a question about the meal plans is, if you enroll here as a student, even if you're a commuter meal plan, you get the 30 swipes, correct?
Honestly, I'm not for sure. Like, all the information on meal plans was kind of, like, really hard to understand.
Yeah, it's you gotta dig through the main campus website to find the meal plan information. It's sometimes it's a little hard to get to, and then that's when you gotta go to the Chartwell's website and dig through that some more. But Mr. James, you got any questions for Ms. Brianna?
What other problems that you mainly looked on, like maybe how the roads were or distances can affect the students that commute to QU?
So my research was primarily how commuters don't feel like they're part of campus. So I didn't focus too much on, like, the actual travel bit because obviously that's an issue. But I did have one person say that they travel 90 minutes a day on the road, and I know a friend who travels 2 hours. So.
Well, I asked because I used to be a commuter last year, and I would drive about an hour between my home and to Quincy University. And one of the problems I always ran into was if I were to head back home late at night, I would run into deer, or winter was an absolute nightmare because of ice. Or even just a simple thing of fog made it difficult to travel. And I was wondering if that could also affect how students feel coming to Quincy University and having to travel here.
100%. I did have someone respond with, like, problems in the wintertime with just, like, how awful. Like, if you've ever been on Highway 24, that's an awful road to drive on in the winter, and just rain. So, like, weather definitely does affect, because when you're already spending so much time on the road, traveling with weather conditions is just awful.
Yeah, roads are not our friends sometimes. And Mother Nature says, you know what, we're going to combine with this road and make it terrible. But great story on commuters. I love to hear that because that's a whole nother 20% of the student population that kind of just gets left out. When us as a student body need to do better to include those commuters. But James, it's December. It's cold. You got a story on heat. Tell us about that.
So I went into the heating problem because, as I said, I was a commuter last year, but I decided to go residential. And I currently live in Heline Dorm, and I've had multiple students complain to me that it's freezing in the dorms, there's no heat, they always take their time with it. But then when I actually started digging into it, I found out we've had the heat on for weeks.
If I remember correctly, they turn it on November 15th, correct?
Around there. So the process they go with it is that both the director of residence and the director of maintenance sit down in a meeting, and they have to plan out when to turn on the heat, because it's not a simple flip of the switch. And the thought that it takes like 3 days to do is it's no longer that problem because they swapped out the boiler. And so they have to look at it to be like, hey, it's maybe cold this week, but next week it's going to be nice and warm. So we can't turn on the heat this week. You got to suffer for a week. Sorry. But if they see that it's going to be continuously getting colder and colder, they turn on the heat for everyone. But sometimes it takes quite a bit of time for these big buildings to get the heat to circulate through. And during that time, students still complain because, well, they're used to their houses, nice and small, and the heaters there can heat up that whole house real right. fast. But when you got a giant dorm building, it gets time.
I know people are they're complaining about Willer because Willer still has the under the floor heating, and that takes a while to kick on. And there's people in Willer that have broken windows and they can't fix their windows, so they're a little complaining. So what solutions did you find with this heating situation that people are just too cold? What did you find that would be a good solution?
Well, I did find out that QU has actually been stocking up on portable heaters. Unfortunately, students are unable to bring in space heaters, but that is due to the fact that QU gets ones that are specialized for these dorms to not trip the breakers or cause any fires. And so every dorm can have at least one heater in it, and Willer actually gets the ability to every bedroom gets a heater in there. And so Willer actually, since it still has the steam in there, it has the best heating. Any dorm building with steam heat has the best heating because Willer got swapped over to a different heating system, in which I found out that system actually decreases in efficiency the colder it gets. In which, once it hits 15 degrees, you might as well turn off the whole system because there's no efficiency left.
Right. Brianna, Freya, you got anything to say?
So I actually live in Willer Hall, and I live on fifth floor. So I used, during October and some period of September too, it was freezing, so I hated it. So my roommate and I, we needed two space heaters, actually. So we have two space heaters. But they turned on the heat now, but we don't get it from the ground. We get it from up above. So it's actually really, sometimes it's too hot in there and it will give us headaches. So we just turn it completely off. So it's still freezing in there, but we can use the space heaters. But I just had problems with heating for a long time. So
I do agree that space heaters is not the best solution and that better heating systems should be implemented in. But it's more of a, as I was informed, they financially have to do it a small bit at a time. But at this current time, the best solution they can have is do the space heaters for every dorm building. And they have been planning to put in better heaters, better boilers, better systems in, is just as a... It said it takes time and money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Plans are great on paper. Just once you put the dollar bill in the vending machine, that's when you see the results. But Brianna, close us out on your ideologies on this as a commuter. What do you think?
I mean, I think heating should just be like a given.
Right.
Because, like, I know that, like, there's some people who are not used to, like, the Midwestern cold, and I could not imagine coming up here for school and then just freezing.
Mother Nature hates the Midwest. I've learned that growing up.
I think that this is a problem that should be sorted out, because, like, this does affect people's lives one way or another. Like, I just think it should be fixed, like, as soon as possible.
Yeah, heat's a very big problem, as we know. We're up north-ish. I think it's been a nice balmy 20 degrees this week, so got to deal with that. But Freya, Brianna, James, thank you. Great stories. Great stories this week. We all loved hearing about them in here. I'm sure everybody in the peanut gallery loved hearing them too as well. You guys have very great talent. You have all the right stories. It's good to hear the students' opinion. Well, great job, guys. A little round of applause for you. Well, thank you for joining us on QU Podcast on the QU Media Podcast Network. Follow us on social media and online at QU TV or QUmedia.net. This has been Carter Lindsay, your host today of the QU Podcast.